Hello, Kyle.
What's up?
We have another episode. This time is a technical one.
Very technical, in-depth.
Yes. What are we going to talk about?
Servos.
We're going to talk about servos. Here we go. Technical servo episode. So what's up, Kyle?
Not much. Just another day in the life, another day at BK Hobbies, and now we're recording a podcast.
So what have you been doing? It's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been a long time. What have I been doing? Just outside of work, I've been playing with some different heli stuff. Same goblins and same servos and all that, but I've been playing with some different motors. And what I did is I built up a 700 competition 3-blade, also known as the Kyle Stacey Edition, and I'm playing with some different motors. Primarily X Nova, trying different sizes and different pulleys, just trying to make an absolute animal of a 3-blade setup.
Do you like the X Nova so far?
So far, I mean, they're new to me and it's different. And you know, I've been flying Scorpion for forever, and I have absolutely nothing bad to say about Scorpion motors. I think they're awesome motors. But you know, we started selling X Nova here, so figured, you know what, might as well give it a shot, see what it's all about. And they've been pretty sweet. They're efficient. They run cool. You know, great power, so I'm just experimenting with different sizes and KVs and RPMs and pulleys and all that.
You
fun
like
stuff.
To change stuff way too often. No way.
All right, you know this about me, but other people don't. But I love to wrench on helis. Love it.
Too much.
I wrench on your stuff. I wrench on my stuff. If you want a new color scheme, I'll do it. If you want, if you crash them, I'll fix it. I love wrenching. I don't know why, but I love it.
You love everything I hate. It's awesome.
I love nitro and wrenching. You're two pet peeves right now. So.
Well, good. I have nothing new other than the fact that I got stung by a wasp. Can you believe that?
You got nailed.
I got nailed hard. I got nailed. I've never been stung by a wasp, like, ever in my life. And that was quite the thing. It hit me. It got me right in between my eye and my ear. Mm-hmm. And it hurt, like, I don't want to say the word, but it hurt bad. So eventually the pain went away. I thought it was okay. And then I woke up the next day, which would have been Monday, with like a completely swollen shot left eye. Couldn't mm-hmm. open it at all. Mm-hmm. Pretty bad. Even right now, it's been 2-3 days. I still have a little bit of, it's a little poofy there, but yeah. It's better. It's way better now. But man, that sucked.
Dude, you came out to the shop the day after and it looked like you got beat up.
That thing got me bad.
And it was after the swelling had gone down. You still look like you got beat up.
Yeah, I take a bee sting over a wasp all day long. Like, I swear I do. I don't wish that upon anybody. That's just shitty. Like, it's bad.
And it wasn't even one. You got nailed by like 4 or 5, like, repeatedly. Yeah,
they were pissed. So I went into the territory.
Bad scenario.
But other than that, nothing much with me. That's it. The weekend was a no-heli weekend. It's one of those that I do every once in a while. No mm-hmm. helis.
Which is just fine.
Just hung out. Nothing much. I don't even remember what I did. It was a lazy weekend. Did a lot of work around the house and
got stung by a wasp.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Those are good weekends, though. Just disconnect, reset your brain, you know. Forget what you do 7 days a week and just kind of kick back and relax and have an adult beverage and ride the motorcycle and hang out with your wife, you know.
We do have a busy several weeks ahead of us, right?
We do. Out of control.
Yeah, we have. We're going to Helly's over Delaware unless something seriously bad happens. Mm-hmm. We will be there.
Yeah.
And that's next weekend. Yep. Actually, as of the release of this episode, it'll be like literally in a couple days.
Right.
Then after that, we have a little 4th of July celebration here.
Mm-hmm.
We will talk about that later. No need to like say anything
now.
No need. But that'll be fun.
Yep.
And then what else we got? We got the preparations for Urcha, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got a few things in the pipeline.
Yeah.
And we have one very, very special guest coming soon.
Very special.
Should we spoil it or not?
Nope. All we will say is that he's never been on a podcast. This is new to him. A lot of people have been curious about him because he's in the social media, but he's kind of behind the scenes.
He's never been on a podcast. No. Ever. No. Can you believe that, though?
That's funny, is he's in the public eye a lot.
Oh, yeah.
He's
never every listener knows who he is.
Yes.
Every listener. There's not a single one that doesn't know who he is.
Right. He's been in the public eye, but he's never been on a podcast. Never really been interviewed very much. Maybe there's a couple YouTube videos here and there, but really not like interviewed a whole lot. So
not at all. Not at all.
So that'll be cool. And we got a couple other guests lined up as well. You know, people you guys have heard of and talked to, and we're going to catch up with them. And
you don't want to spoil the one?
I mean, we're going to have Bobby. I mean,
yeah, no, Bobby, no, the one for next week.
Nope. Okay. We're just going to surprise him.
In case it falls apart, because he doesn't have Skype.
Right.
Yeah, so right. He has to hook up with another friend of ours.
Right. So we have a special guest, and we have Bobby Watts coming on to tell us what he's
been Bobby's up to. Not a special guest?
He is a very special guest, but he is kind of anticipated. I mean, he's our best buddy, so, you know, he's going to be on with her. You know,
and he's a social media expert too,
and a drone expert, and he's been in the movie scenes and
yep.
movie lifestyle, so he can tell us all the
yeah that'd be cool
the guest to stars
get some
that,
stories so. From him.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get on to the topic subject today. Yes. Where it's a technical episode, so it might be a little draining, but we'll try to make it entertaining and not so technical for you guys.
Agreed.
We're going to talk about servos.
Servos. You know, you and I both have a fair bit of experience with servos nowadays.
Yep.
Yeah. So
I agree. And there's a lot of stuff that goes on with the servo.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start with a little bit about history. I hate history, but we have to talk about it very briefly. So for the guys out there that are interested in knowing how the servos were invented, you know, obviously there's the industrial servo and then there's the RC servo, but RC servo started back in the late 40s to early 50s, and they were basically powered by a rubber escapement. If you look that up on like Wikipedia or something, it's spelled ESCAPEMENTS, escapements. It was a very rudimentary way to power any kind of device.
It's wild.
It's what they use to power, like, what, a clock or something? Like,
I looked it up quick. It was, like, a weird way to power a clock and keep it ticking. Yeah, so it's, like, power a clock. Like, the actual definition of escapement was a mechanism in a clock or watch that alternately checks and releases the train by a fixed amount. So,
okay.
Whatever that means.
I know that some servos afterwards were controlled by relays, and basically what these relays did is they took the signal to close the relay in itself. So the servos basically returned to neutral when the signal quit. Other servos actually maintained their position when the signal quit, because some people needed the servo to maintain that position so that they could use it for like a throttle servo or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Then in the late 50s and the early 60s, the servos by then had improved quite a bit. They were still not proportional, so it was like full on, full off sort of thing, right? And the known brands were the Bolt, I think, and Co. And there's a third that I can't remember. I think it's maybe Boner or B-O-N-N-E-R. Something like Banner.
Banner. It's probably Banner.
Banner, whatever.
Because Boner would be quite the brand name.
Yeah. And there was a guy by the name of Walt Good that worked on proportional control and by using pulsers. And so that's like where the early proportional servos came into play. That's the early days of the proportional servos. They were still using relays and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, the proportional control wasn't good. It was very erratic.
Yeah.
But it's still, you know, it was still functional. And then centering back then was done with springs. So they would take a spring or a rubber band, and they would just rubber band the servo horn or whatever to make it return to center.
No way.
And they relied on that. Plus, you know, the air over the surfaces. There were no RC helicopters. It was mainly airplanes. So, and then I think the very first true proportional servos that used a real feedback control loop, they came around, I believe, in the late 50s to early 60s. Mm-hmm. And they were, of course, all analog.
Sure.
So they basically converted an AM signal into an FM signal. Just without getting into too much technicality, like, look at where we're at today. Like,
it's crazy.
We have, you know, there's no such thing as an analog servo anymore. It doesn't exist.
But like, what's funny is like VBAR still supports it though. Because when you set up a VBAR, for those of you who are familiar with VBAR, and you run through a setup on a Neo and with a VBAR control, when you're selecting the pulse width, there's digital servo 1520, digital servo 760, and then you can also still select analog. So
yeah, that's like crazy. Yeah, that's crazy. But if you guys are interested in like some a history about servos, there's a lot of cool stuff on a website. It's rchalloffame.org. rchalloffame.org. You can learn a lot about the history of models, model aviation, you know, RC in general. It's really cool. But yeah, look at where we're at today. So we don't have, I think there's some analog servos you can buy, but I mean, I don't even know who in the world would try to like use an analog servo, but you know, we've not only gone digital for the last who knows how many years, decades, but now we're also doing brushless and cordless, which I think is the next topic, right?
Yep.
So what is brushless? What is cordless? So originally, most servos were cordless. All of them were.
Sure.
They were analog. Then they became cordless digital servos.
Mm-hmm.
Cord, in other words, like brushed motors,
mm-hmm.
but they were digital.
Correct.
So the brush motor is just a very basic DC motor. It just takes a simple DC source of power, like positive and negative. That's all it does. And the thing with the brush motor is it has a very limited life cycle. It loses its, I guess you could say, its torque or its power over time. And it has a very, very limited life cycle. So the cordless motor was developed around the concept of a brushed motor. And the main difference with the cordless motor, which is cordless is the standard today for servos. I mean, we have also brushless, but we'll get into that later. But the main thing with the cordless motor is it doesn't have, the brushed motor has a soft iron core that is used to wind the coils, right? The cordless motors don't have that soft iron core. So there's no core in there. So because there's no core, the motor is more efficient and it accelerates and decelerates faster. So acceleration, deceleration is improved dramatically because the iron core and cordless motors contributes to like 90% of the inertia you see in the motor itself. So when you go like give it an input and the motor moves, the servo arm moves, servo horn, like there's a lot of mass to move, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you remove all that core, you're getting rid of all that mass. Therefore, you're getting rid of inertia. So you accomplish the movement in a much shorter period of time. There's a lot of other technical things that have to do with it. There's no cogging on a cordless motor where there is cogging on a brushed, mm-hmm. you know, DC motor. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of advantages. And the cordless motor is very inexpensive still to today.
Mm-hmm.
Now we get cordless motors for very little money, which therefore we can make a pretty nice, reliable, solid servo that performs flawlessly for, you know, a very, again, reasonable amount of money.
Right.
And then we have the brushless line of or type of servo, which is comprised of a brushless motor. And like that doesn't really require much of an explanation. Like all you guys listening that fly helicopters, if you fly electric, you know what a brushless motor is. It's a three-phase motor. It's a totally different concept. It works in a completely different way than just a standard two-phase DC cordless motor. You know, we get all these questions all the time. Is there like an advantage or a disadvantage, brushless versus cordless? Well, I personally fly cordless. I like cordless. I just like the feel. It's a totally different feel. Don't you agree, Kyle?
Well, that's what I was going to get into right after this was the actual pilot side of it, outside of the technical side. So to kind of break it down, Bert and I kind of go back and forth with brushless and cordless all the time about the advantages and disadvantages. And one thing we get all the time is if people buy a brushless BK servo, they'll be like, well, when I move it by hand, it feels tight. Well, yeah, it's a brushless motor. Brushless motors naturally feel tighter in the hand when you move it, but there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. What you're feeling is the brushless motor.
That, and there might be a little bit of what people consider a notchiness, and it has to do with the type of brushless motor that we're using in our servos.
Correct.
It has nothing to do with the gears. It has mm-hmm. nothing to do with gears being notchy mm-hmm. and changing gears as many times as you want. You're right. still going to feel that because you're feeling the motor.
Right.
Not the gears in themselves.
It's totally normal. So. There's nothing wrong with it. But outside of that, completely down to flying, what I have noticed is that, like Bert mentioned, is that a coreless motor can accelerate faster. So in like a smack kind of flying or any sort of like smack down quick reaction kind of maneuver, you're going to prefer the coreless motor because it's going to react faster and it's going to feel quicker off center, more natural. Like you're just going to overall, I feel you're going to like notice a more connected feeling with a coreless motor servo because it's just a faster responding servo.
Yeah. And I mean, everybody has their own preference, right? I mean, so when you think about brushless, okay, think of less power consumption. Because a brushless motor is more efficient when it comes to the use of power. There's less internal resistance, so they're going to run more efficiently. Mm-hmm. They're going to run cooler. They're going to use a little bit less power. When you think of a coreless motor, it's going to be a little bit less expensive, no doubt. Actually, a lot less expensive. But it's also going to run a little bit warmer, and it's going to use a little bit more power. Now, that is all very relative because it has a lot to do with the type of servo in itself. Mm-hmm. So if you put two servos that have the exact same specs in terms of speed, torque, everything else, centering, like everything else, and you power them with the exact same power source, the coreless will use a little bit more power than the brushless. Mm-hmm. But it's impossible to make that comparison across the board with all servos because every servo has different specs, right? So you can have a coreless servo that is, very aggressive in terms of speed, torque, and things like that when it comes to the specs, and a brushless servo that is very tame, and the brushless is going to use a lot less power and require less energy, less power overall to run. Mm-hmm. It's going to last longer, of course. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you could have a brushless servo that is very aggressive in terms of its specs and a coreless that is just very tame. And at the end of the day, you know, the brushless will use more power than the coreless in that particular sure. case. So sure. it's very relative. It's not a drastic difference. And it's not only something that is dictated by whether it is coreless or brushless. It's also dictated by, again, the specs. Mm-hmm. How is the servo spec'd out? What kind of gears it has? What's the gear ratio?
Right.
What's the speed? What's the torque? You mm-hmm. know, how much voltage are you feeding through the servo? The higher the voltage, the more current you're going to use.
True.
Contrary to what people think, oh, I'm using 8.4 volts, it should use less current. No, it's going to use more current. Mm-hmm. Proportionally, maybe less, but at the end of the day, the number is higher.
Right.
So, bottom line is whether you're buying any kind of brand, and obviously we're associated with BK servos, there's no doubt about that. We can't deny that.
Yeah.
But this is not about BK servo. This is about us teaching you guys or sharing with you some of the knowledge we have with regards to servos and their setup and everything else. And regardless of what you decide to do, whether you want to go with very cheap, expensive, cheap servos, very expensive servos, brushless, coreless, you can't go wrong. They're all solid. They all work
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
They all have a different feel. Mm-hmm. They all do.
Yep.
And depending on your flying style, you might, or your flying ability, you might be able to tell the difference more or less between mm-hmm. different servos. But at the end of the day, it's almost like a personal preference thing, right?
It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. Yeah. I've always, before I flew BK servo, I always flew brushless servos. And now that I fly with BK servos, I'm really leaning towards the coreless side of things because I love the off-center response that the coreless servo provides. Like the DS7001 and 7002 offers a very responsive feel off-center. So I consider myself more of a smack pilot than anything. So the coreless servo really, really kind of caters towards my style. But if you're more on the precision side of things, you might prefer the brushless because I think the brushless center absolutely outstanding, and that's a very precise servo. So for big flying and fast flying, you can't go wrong with the brushless, where it's going to center absolutely perfect every time. And not that the coreless don't, but like, you know, the brushless just offers an extremely locked in feeling.
Yeah, and before we move on to the next topic, I didn't realize how long this would take, but I wanted to make an observation, and that's what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said this before in a couple of different podcasts, and I'll try to make it as quick as I can. The brushless servo, when you put it back-to-back specs-wise with the coreless servo, if they both look the same, if they both say, for example, 0.05 speed as an example, you're always going to feel that the cordless servo is faster. And that is because that initial acceleration off center when you feed the input happens a lot quicker on the cordless servo, and it happens a lot slower on the brushless servo. Mm-hmm. So even though when the manufacturers give you the specs and they say it's 0.05 at 60 degrees, it means that from 0 to 60 degrees, it takes 0.05 seconds to get there. But the cordless ramps up faster than the brushless.
Correct.
So when you're flying your heli, you're not moving your servo 60 degrees. You're moving it very, very little, mm-hmm. depending on the helicopter and the helicopter head geometry and so forth. Swash plate to head geometry. But you're moving maybe 10, 20, 30 degrees most of the time. So when you feed that initial input on a cordless, regardless of whether the specs are the same, it's always going to feel faster because it's accelerating faster. Mm-hmm. So that is one thing that Kyle and I like about, particularly about the cordless servo.
Right.
Lifetime is a little shorter, but in the big scheme of things, if we get 1,000 flies out of a servo, we're more than satisfied, more mm-hmm. than happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, if, like Kyle said, if you are looking for a servo that centers very well, then brushless is the way to go because they mm-hmm. do center a little bit better. They feel more planted, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the difference is also not extreme. It's not something that is very noticeable.
It's,
you know?
So negligible. Like yeah. I like to think of myself as like a picky person when it comes to setup, and I mean it's so negligible when it comes down to centering. Like there's so few things that I can point out between the two as far as centering and precision goes. Like the off center feel, that's something that I can point out pretty well, but when it comes down to centering and precision, like it's just such a close thing for me. But you can still feel it throughout maneuvers. So it's not like, oh, the cordless servos don't center. No, that's not what I'm saying at all. It's just that the brushless center better to an extent to where you can see it, but it's not, you know, a world of a difference is basically what I'm getting at. But it is there.
Yeah. The next topic we're going to talk about is hertz and pulse, that band and things like that. So the hertz, that's kind of important. A lot of servos nowadays, uh-huh. digital servos, are running at 333 hertz. That is basically the rate in which the data is refreshed or sent to the servo, right? So it's not something that you guys need to worry about. It really, it's one of those things where we feel like the difference is negligible. A servo that only does, say, 200 versus 333 versus 500 plus hertz, at the end of the day, that shouldn't be something that dictates whether that's a servo that's worthwhile getting or not. Like, mm-hmm. it's just a different speed of data transmission. It does not really, it's negligible in terms of how it feels in the air. So, but what is important about hertz is not to set up your flybarless, your flight controller, the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
V-bar, what's it called? Most systems out there, including Spartan, already have a preset mm-hmm. Hertz rate in them. So you don't have to mess with it. You don't have to touch anything. I think that's the ideal situation because you don't want to really be messing with that. Other systems out there, I believe the BeastX, I'm not totally sure. I know the Brain and the Icon. You can change the hertz rate.
Right.
Don't mess with it if you're not absolutely certain that that's what your servo likes. And I've noticed that on some systems, they say, for example, like 333, and I've seen that at times they actually send a higher hertz rate. So if unsure, just run the lowest that you can for digital servo, which is 200 hertz.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you should do. The servo is going to run cooler, it's going to be happier, and it's going to appreciate you for doing that. It's almost like, you know what I relate that to, Kyle? It's like the timing on an ESC. You know how some people increase the timing? They think they're going to get more power. They don't get any more power. All they get is heat. It's just dissipating in the form of heat.
Yep.
It's the same thing. If you increase your hertz rate beyond what the servo is capable of doing, servo's just going to heat up, but it's not going to give you any extra performance or any additional speed or torque or anything like that.
Right.
So don't mess with that. That's the only relevant thing about hertz. Just leave it where it's supposed to be, or actually run it even lower than where it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Pulse is, of course, important, but you know, most servos and more flight controllers adapt to the pulse on the servo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially on cyclic, it is known that most cyclic servos are running at the 1520 pulse. Just if your flight controller, for some strange odd reason, I don't know if any of them lets you change the pulse, don't change it. Mm-hmm. Don't mess with it. Leave it as default.
Right.
Now, the tail is important because we've gotten some feedback from people that say, oh, my servo is bad or it's not working. Well, you don't have the right tail pulse.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of servos run on 760 pulse. Some servos run on 1520 pulse for the tail.
Correct.
If you don't set it right, your servo is just not going to work. It's basically going to be pegged to one side.
Mm-hmm.
Pulse is basically the signal sent to the servo for center, or the range, the signal range, like the low point and the high point. So it's trying to find center at the wrong pulse. So just make sure that your flight controller is set to the right pulse. If you have a BK servo, you know, it'll always be 760.
Mm-hmm.
I think JR's are at 1520. I think Futaba's are 760s.
It's mixed. Some are 1520. Yeah. When in doubt, just look at the servo box.
Yeah, look at the servo box. Will tell you. Just follow what the box says.
Yep.
If you made the mistake of plugging it in and you forgot to change the setting, don't be worried. It's not going to burn it, but unplug it right away. Don't let it sit there because it could bind and it can eventually like hurt something within the servo.
Yes, just be careful.
Yeah. Dead band we can get into later as we explore the next topics, because I think one of the topics is servo resolution. So you want to talk about that, Cal?
Yeah, the next thing we're going to cover is what to look for in a servo. So if you're in the market for a new set of servos, I say there's two big things you look at. You look at performance and you look at price. First, price, is it in your price range? That's totally up to you. I can't convince you one way or another on that. But performance, there's many different things to look at. So the first one is centering. So centering is important for a couple of different things. If your servo does not center well, you will constantly be adjusting trim. So in a hover, if it's, you know, hovering perfectly level one day and then the next flight it's starting to drift, well, that's centering. You know, your servo is not coming back to center where you told the flybarless it was at 0 degrees or zero, you know, midpoint of the servo, basically. As far as flying characteristics, if you're doing like a loop, you might notice that your servo is kind of, or your helicopter is kind of rolling out of the loop. That's because one of your servos is not centering very well. Things along that line, if it's not tracking right, you know, if you're doing flips and it doesn't come back to where you want it, that's also centering. So centering for me is a big point, because I know where I tell the helicopter to go, and if it doesn't go there, that's centering, you know. It's where you rely on the servo and the helicopter to end up. So centering is very important. The next is torque. Torque is kind of relative to what you're expecting out of the servo. So I would prefer a servo of higher torque versus someone who's kind of doing hovering or kind of sport flying, because you don't need all the torque.
And honestly, I think, in my opinion, torque is the most important characteristic to centering, I would say.
I think centering is more important than torque.
And then torque is second, right?
Correct.
And then speed would be the last thing you care about, because Agreed. You want a servo to be fast enough, and speed is super important if you're a 3D-er.
Right.
But it doesn't do anything for you if you don't have the torque and the centering you need.
Right. If it's not consistent, reliable, and doing what you need, then it could be the fastest servo in the world. But if it doesn't come back to center, then what's the point? Torque is something that you can kind of almost tune in a way. Kind of something to base off that is the servo arm / resolution of the servo. So a lot of times the helicopter manufacturer will tell you what distance to put the servo arm ball at. So, for example, for SAB helicopters, they have their own servo arm. And 9 times out of 10, you're going to run it at the middle hole position, which I believe is 18 millimeters, right? 18?
I think it's 15, 18, and 21, 15, I think.
Yeah. So Bert and I run 18 on all of our stuff, because that's just a recommended distance. And what that does is it's an even compromise between speed and torque. So if you move the servo ball closer to the spline of the servo, you get more torque and less speed. But if you move it out, you get more speed and less torque. So it's all kind of a balance between setup and speed and torque.
And, you know, some flight controllers, for example, dictate that you have to measure your cyclic pitch. Like on the V-bar, you have to measure cyclic pitch at 8 degrees, right?
Right.
And they recommend that value to end up being between 80 and 100.
Mm-hmm.
So if your servo horn, if your ball that goes from the servo horn to your swash
mm-hmm.
is too close to the servo in itself, to the spline, mm-hmm. you're going to get less throw. So that means you're going to end up, perhaps, if you go too close to the servo spline, over 100.
Mm-hmm.
If your servo horn is too long, you're going to have a lot of throw. You're going to lose some resolution. You're going to lose some torque. You're going to gain speed, but you're also going to increase your throw by a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that that value might be under 80, say, on V-bar. You want that value to be where it's supposed to be.
Correct.
So that's important to find the right balance between in the length of your servo horns, because that affects the torque, mm-hmm. that affects the speed, and that affects the resolution.
Correct.
And resolution is important too, because resolution is tied to some degree to the centering of the servo, or the ability of the servo to feel, to have the ability to control the model correctly. If you have little resolution, it means that for every freaking millimeter on the stick that you move, you're moving your servo too much.
Mm-hmm.
Your helicopter's going to feel squirrely, mm-hmm. and it's, obviously you can slow down your rates, you can add expo,
mm-hmm.
you can increase your rotor gain and whatever you want to do, and you can mask it, but you will never fix it because you have a resolution problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is causing the stability. It's suffering. It's making the stability suffer.
Right.
Right.
True.
So yeah, good points. That's important.
Yeah.
And talking about resolution or centering. Talking about centering. Dead band is an important topic that I didn't talk about earlier. And the importance of dead band is dead band means for. Basically, how to put this in short, quick terms here, layman terms. So as you move your, it for what is the minimum input that it would take from your flight controller or your transmitter or whatever
mm-hmm.
to make that servo move? You want a servo that has a very low dead band. Like most today's standard is 1 microsecond. It's measuring microseconds.
Mm-hmm.
That means that for every microsecond step on your pulse frequency, your servo is detecting a change and is moving. So when you move left to right to left, or up and down, or whatever you do, and you let go to center, you want that center to return to within that 1 microsecond section on the servo travel range, right? Mm-hmm. So look for a servo that has at least 1 microsecond or less. There's some that have half of 1 microsecond. They're very expensive. 1 microsecond is the sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
I've flown servos that have 2-3 microseconds. After you get to 3, you start noticing the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Where it feels kind of like on ice skates, it's not kind of returning the center right. It just feels loose.
Right.
Doesn't feel locked in.
Right.
So, yeah.
But moving along. So that was what to look for in a servo. So next, what we're going to cover is gears.
Yeah.
The gears of a servo. Very important. So there's two types of gears. There's plastic gears and metal gears. I'd say that metal gears are the most popular these days. I remember back in the day that some servos, I'm not going to name any brands, but some would have primarily metal gears with one plastic gear as a sacrificial gear.
Yeah.
So in a crash, you know, that plastic gear would break and then you replace the plastic gear.
Hey, a decade ago, that was fine. Futaba 9252 servos, they're all plastic gears and they work great.
Yeah.
The only thing is when you crash, you had to change the gears.
Correct.
That's it.
And that's my next point is that plastic gears are great so that when you crash, you break all the gears. So that's also the downfall, though. When you crash, you have to change all the gears.
But they're obviously not very strong for today's flying styles, right?
Correct, correct.
But the beauty of plastic is they don't have any slop, ever.
Right.
You know?
Right, that's true.
So that's a positive thing. But you have to keep in mind, if you're flying, trying to do any kind of sport,
mm-hmm.
anything beyond sports flying, you have got to have some kind of metal gear.
Right, yeah. Right. And I'm not going to, like I said, not going to name any brands, but back in the day, I have stripped plastic servo gear in the air trying to 3D it harder than what it was designed for, and that's a downfall of a plastic gear. But anyways, nowadays it's all metal gear, aluminum and titanium gears,
or steel
gears as well. Yep. And but you still need a sacrificial point. So what I recommend people do is they use some sort of plastic/carbon fiber horn. And the number one horn I will always recommend, not for any affiliation reason, but the SAB servo horn.
Yeah.
Because
another good horn is the Mikado one.
Correct, the Mikado
horn. Those two are really good.
Yeah.
And that's a good point, because you have no idea how many times I've seen people with aluminum servo horns.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge no.
Don't do it.
Your servo is hard mounted on the helicopter. Mm-hmm. If you own a Goblin your servo is mounted on a piece of aluminum, on a block of aluminum that is super strong.
Mm-hmm.
The servo case is made out of aluminum.
Mm-hmm.
Your servo gears are made out of some sort of metal alloy, whether it is steel or titanium or aluminum. And now you're introducing another aluminum part, which is your servo horn, and you're going through a metal rod up to your swash blade, another metal rod to your blades. Everything transfers. Something has got to give.
Something will give.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you want to use a horn that is strong enough to not break in flight, but mm-hmm. that is weak enough to break every time you crash.
Which either break or strip. Both is fine. But yeah, after a crash, if you're using any sort of plastic or like an SAB arm, and it doesn't break, what you should do is power it up and push on the servo to make sure it's not stripped or skip teeth.
Yeah, push on the servo, push on the horn itself right. real hard.
Right.
And if you stripped it, it's going to give. It's gonna skip a few teeth
right.
within the servo spline itself. Yeah,
correct.
Yeah.
So check that out. I mean, metal gears are pretty standard these days. Like I said, plastic arms or some sort of plastic and carbon hybrid. Seriously, do not use metal arms. As long as you use a reputable brand of servo arms, they're not going to break in the air. Knock on wood, I've never once, ever stripped or broken an SAB or Mikado arm in the air. Never had an issue, ever.
No, never. And, you know, and it depends on the helicopter too, Kyle. Because, like, people that are flying, like, for example, like, a small helicopter like a T-Rex 450 or, like, you know, the Goblin 380 or mm-hmm. the little Goblin Fireball guys or the Oxys and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just use a cheap plastic servo horn.
That's what we use.
Yeah, yeah, the cheapest, most flexible horn is the best. It's mm-hmm. your friend.
Yep.
Some people argue, well, I can feel the flex and flight. Well, okay, sure. that's the price you got to pay.
That's
you
part
put
of it,
a stronger
yeah.
servo horn. You know, I know SAB makes a servo horn for the 380.
Mm-hmm.
It does perhaps feel a little bit better if you're doing really hard 3D in flight because it does not give at all.
Sure.
But you have to be ready to replace your servo gears. And I don't care what brand servo you're using. If you use those horns, you're going to break your servo gears.
We've seen it across on many brands now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I broke gears testing a 380 on different brands because we didn't have a micro servo ourselves.
Sure.
So it's a trade-off, right? You mm-hmm. you want the best feel you can get in the air. You want zero flex. You use the stronger horns.
Mm-hmm.
You want to preserve your gears when you crash. You use the mm-hmm. cheap plastic stock horns. Like, for instance, the ones we ship with our own servos, they're perfect. Mm-hmm. That's what you want to use.
Yeah.
Now, when you get into the 600 plus 570 and higher size, 600, 700 size, yes, use Mikado or SAB horns mm-hmm. because they have a good mix of carbon and plastic. They're not weak enough to break in flight, but they will break when you have a hard crash.
Another thing that we haven't touched on yet is helicopters with bell cranks. So like the old school T-Rex 700, it has a bell crank system where the swash goes down to another arm, which has two long linkage rods that goes to the servo. So on that system, I do believe you can get away with metal arms on the servo end because there's enough things in between the blade grip arm and the swash point or the swash plate and everything to break and give before it gets to your servo.
That's a good point.
So yeah. you can use metal arms on that.
Cool. So what about tips for setup, Kyle?
Setup. Overall cyclic tips. Outside of the actual setup for a pitch and cyclic pitch, I can't really give tips on that because that depends on your flybarless and helicopter itself. But just some general tips and tricks. Strain relief. I've seen a lot of different helicopters at different events, man, and they just pull on that wire tremendously.
Strain relief. And
seriously.
It's important on electric, but it's even 10 times more important on nitro.
Yes.
Don't tug on your wires. Make sure they're relaxed.
Yes.
And don't be that guy that uses loom. Please don't.
No need.
I don't get it, dude. I see this thing. It's like people like the prettiness, the beautiful Italian. Seriously, it's like there's no need. There's really not a reason to use loom. I know it looks nice.
Yeah.
It introduces a layer of complication to your setup.
Mm-hmm.
It makes your wire heavy.
Mm-hmm.
It causes your wire to tug on your servo and your servo board
mm-hmm.
unnecessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're really, really spent a lot of time to be meticulous with how you route your wires, don't use the loom because it you're adding weight to your wire. You don't want to add weight to your wire.
Well, how I see the loom being beneficial is if you're going to route a servo wire or any kind of wire around a carbon frame, you don't want the wire to rub on carbon. That's fine.
Yeah, but correct.
A way around that is just put some Velcro on the carbon. Or
and SAB, that's what we do, right?
Yeah, or yeah. SAB has frame protection, a little rubber piece. Just put that anywhere. And if so, there's ever a wire near it or anything.
So you do it the same way I do it, Kyle. Like, you don't put, like, you don't zip tie, like, a servo wire or any kind of wire onto any part of the helicopter directly. So, correct. In other words, like, you take a little bit of, a Velcro strap, and you wrap it around the wire,
mm-hmm.
and then you zip tie it. So the zip tie is putting pressure on the Velcro,
mm-hmm.
which then in turn is putting the pressure on the wire. So there's not a pressure point per se on the wire.
None of my wires touch carbon fiber anywhere.
Yeah,
there's always some space. And then outside of that, I mean, use Goop into your fly brush unit. If you've never heard of Goop, it's a great invention. You can get it at auto parts stores. Basically, it's a glue that's strong enough to keep your wires in the unit, but you can still pull on them to remove them if you need to.
Yeah, some people, I think there's a thing called Shugu.
It's
similar.
Yeah,
Shugu. It's like a brand name, isn't it? Or something like that, whatever. It's all the same. Some people use hot glue, too.
Hot glue works. It's just any sort of like sticky glue that'll keep the wires into the gyro, but you can still remove them if you have to. That's great for, especially on a nitro, for any vibration, it'll keep the servo wires from, you know, backing out and unplugging. Because if you've ever been flying and your servo unplugs, man, that is just the worst way to end your day right there. But outside of that, vibration is another big thing for servos. So if you're flying nitro, please, please use the rubber pieces, the little rubber grommets that come with the servo, because that helps dampen out and remove any sort of vibration that's going to the servo. It's an electronic piece. They don't like vibration. So if you can dampen vibration or eliminate any sort of unnecessary vibration of the servo, that's great. Especially the servo wire going to the board. So your servo wire gets soldered to a board. Over time from vibration, that solder connection can fatigue.
Yeah.
So that also ties back to strain relief. You know,
and
just keep everything smooth.
And like you said, I mean, and nitro is such a vibration house. That's all it does is vibrates. And back in the day, we used to dial indicate shafts and like motors and things like that. Just don't be that guy to take your nitro helicopter and fly it without looking into it closely.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a crash, you could have a bent shaft, a secondary shaft, a starter shaft. You can have a bent crank shaft on your engine and not even know it.
Mm-hmm.
If your helicopter is having issues to where your screws loosen up over time, you have to keep tightening things, you have a little bit of a tail fin vibration, slow down, look into it, because it's not only the servos that can suffer and cause a problem down the road, it's also your flight controller, it's also your mm-hmm. governor if you run a separate governor.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, anything that's electronic does not like vibration.
Sailor receivers, everything.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So avoid vibration. Don't need it.
And don't be that guy that turns on the helicopter with your blade holder on. or the tail blades locked together and binding up. And then you turn it on and your blade holder's on. And now your tail is making this. And you're freaking servos. I actually have known of several people in the last few months that have done that and fried their servos.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say names, but yes.
Yeah.
One of our dealers contacted us that his customer did this.
Yeah.
And his customer was nice. He understood it was his fault. So we replaced the servo. I mean, he paid.
Yeah.
We gave him a deal just because we really felt bad, right? But he knew it was his fault. But yeah, don't, like, think about these little details. All these details add up to make or break your setup. And this is just basic things that apply not only to like servos, but they really apply to electronics across the board. So
just be careful. Don't let your servos bind up. Don't, like, in a crash, a lot of times, especially if you crash on the rotor head, you know, you can get your servos locked up in any position wherever they last were. And you know, the first thing I try and do is get the thing back up on the skids just so the servos get freed up and, you know, If you can hear, you know the noise when it happens, especially like on the tail. If you have the limit set just barely off, that noise it makes, that's terrible. That is just one very quick way to kill a servo.
The other thing is if you end up using a very strong servo horn and you have a crash, when you get to the crash site, if you happen to strip your servo gears, because servo gears will strip, whether they're aluminum, whether they're steel, they will strip if the crash is hard enough and there's nothing that will give. And you hear your servo humming because there's a strip gear. Just unplug it as quickly as you can. Over time, you could burn your servo that way too. Yep. So, I think we've covered a lot.
That was a very in-depth episode.
Yeah.
That was a lot.
I think we went over our normal time too. I'm not sure, but I think we're over time.
That's fine. It's informative.
But, I mean, it's just a lot of this stuff is common sense, isn't it? It's... You know, and I hate to say it that way because that might sound like an arrogant thing to say, because the people that really haven't been in the hobby long enough or that don't have the hobby experience that, say, you and I have, might not see it as a common sense thing. But, you know, if you're ever in doubt, just slow down, stop, and ask questions, you know, ask us. Like, we don't have a problem answering any questions you may have. There's no such thing as a dumb question. So
we've heard it all by now.
Yeah, and we were... Kyle doesn't remember his newbie days, but I do. He was too little. He was still... I don't say it. But but I remember my newbie days. I mean, I had all kinds of questions. And there's nothing wrong with asking questions. So if you're ever in doubt, just ask a question before you make a newbie mistake, and that's all good.
It's better to ask a silly question than to, you know, have to replace a $100 servo because of a simple mistake.
Yeah, or any other kind of electronics.
Anything, I mean,
so even though this episode was about servos, like, a lot of these tips when it comes to being careful, how to route your wires, vibration, look out for vibrations, all these things, you know, prevent binding. All these things apply to a lot of the electronics on the helicopter. So, but yeah, so if you're a nitro guy, hang out with people that do nitro and pick their brains. Nitro is quite a unique animal. Like, as much as I love nitro, nitro is a pain in the ass, and it does require some degree of mastery of the hobby.
It's very annoying, isn't it? Yeah, it's very annoying.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of fun to fly, but everything that happens before flying and after flying is a pain in the ass. The maintenance, you know, the everything, the cleaning, you know, that's also important. You know, you get nitro, some of these helicopters, like, not to say Goblin has a problem, but you know, engine is mounted way forward, muffler is way forward, tail servo is mounted on a tail boom. You're going to get a lot of nitro on that tail servo.
Clean it up.
Just at least wipe it after every flight and after your flying session, clean it well. There's just basic steps to take care of your electronics. Same with your flight controller. It's sitting out back. It's kind of exposed a little bit. It's going to get flooded with nitro. Clean it. Take care of it. Take care of your stuff. If you do proper setup, proper maintenance, and you take care of your stuff, everything will last you 10 times longer. We know that from experience, because I've experienced being not very careful with my setups, and on the other hand, being extremely careful and cautious, and I can tell a difference in how long things last me, you know?
Agreed, yeah.
So
keep an eye out for things. Make sure bolts are tight. Make sure your servos are doing well. Like Bert said, clean them up. It might seem obvious, but fuel inside of a servo never equals anything good.
No, I agree.
So just
so thanks for listening.
Appreciate it.
And Kyle, you're available at...
I might be available at facebook.com/KyleStaceyRC
and Instagram. You don't use that, but you should. You should. You have to.
Instagram.com/KyleStacey
Wow. Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
And I am at Bert. What is it? Bert RC.
Bert RC. Facebook, we have the same ones.
Facebook.com/BertRC Or Instagram.com/BertCammerer
And then...
_Cammerer
Shameless plug, Instagram.com/TheBKOfficial And
BKOfficial. Well, we post a lot of podcast stuff in there, too. Anyway, thanks for listening, guys. And stay tuned, because I believe that we're going to have a special guest very soon.
We will. Very, very soon.
See y'all.
See you later.